comments. Then at 9 is a rebroadcast of Alternative Radio's talk about surveillance capitalism with Shoshana Zuboff. Then at 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. All that is coming up here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. And don't forget, if you'd like to become a member of KBOO, because that's who brings you all this wonderful programming, are the members. Just go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on that donate button. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support. Oh, wait. Before we do that, everyone, it's a Tuesday morning. That's the best time to hear some messages from KBOO.
Tune in to KBOO Wednesday, July 24th from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. for the 21st Annual Homelessness Marathon. Broadcasting from a different city each year and airing on non-commercial radio stations coast to coast, this annual marathon features live reports, interviews with advocates and experts, and calls from listeners all over the country. This year's programming includes the voices of youth, students, and LGBTQ people, panels on fighting evictions, transitioning people back into housing, and ending homelessness now. That's the Homelessness Marathon, Wednesday, July 24th, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
At KBOO, we accept many kinds of vehicle donations. We accept fuzzy vans, broken cars, zippy scooters, seaworthy boats, well-worn farm equipment, family-sized SUVs, old jet skis, and more. If your vehicle has a clean title, we can take it as a donation. If your vehicle isn't working, we can work with that, too. Call 877-KBOO-123. That's 877-526-6123. Or go to our website, kboo.fm/vehicle.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 6 p.m. More information on Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550. It's time for a banjo.
It's cooled down and tempers are flaring.
That's
contrast to, you know, well, never mind. Hey, today we're going to do a bunch of things.
Boy, we're off to a good start.
Yeah, we're off to a good start because this is KBOO. And I think we're going to have Joe Keating on briefly. And he's actually in charge of security for this big peace march, which is going to hopefully be peaceful. It's legal. It's, you know, everything. It's family friendly, as they say. And that's on Sunday, the 28th, at 1 p.m. I'm going to go. Cool. Old people like me can go.
Well, okay.
Never mind. Don't just let that pass.
Okay. Well, tell us a little more about this.
Well, this is an effort to essentially say opposition to war. No war in Iran or Venezuela. And in my mind, there's a toss-up. Which do we butcher first? So, you know, I think it's a worthwhile thing. And then pointing out that the way we work sanctions are murderous. Demands are demilitarize America's war that only serves the 1%, stop the war on the border, No occupation, no coup, no media lies. All right. Money for people and the planet, not war. So it's a rally in March. It starts at the amphitheater, Salmon Street Springs, at Waterfront Park at 1 p.m. Hopefully, it'll be, I know it's permitted and so on, and it's family-friendly, and hopefully there'll be lots of families there. So that's a thing.
Yeah, I hope so.
So
Is it the possibility of war with in both of those venues is quite real,
I'd say. I don't think people realize how close Trump skirts toward war.
No, I think that's something we need to investigate in more detail on a future program.
Yeah, we need to look under his skirts.
Yeah, and the other thing to bear in mind, too, regarding, and then, you know, please don't misunderstand what I'm about to say, because I'm all in favor of peace marches. But these days, they perhaps are not as safe as they once were.
Well, the idea of this actually has serious security, all the permitting process, inviting young people, inviting everybody, families. Uh-huh. Hopefully, it'll harken back to a more peaceful time.
Harken.
Yes, that's
yeah. Not so safe, not simply because, the unfortunate role that the police often play in these situations.
Well, the police are problematic always.
Yeah, but, right-wing loons.
Loons?
Loons.
That's kind of bird.
Yeah.
It's also the money of Canada. I'm full of misinformation today.
Interestingly enough, this is not at all what we had planned to talk about on today's show, but hey, let's talk about it for a few minutes. I really struggle with this notion that you need a permit to peaceably demonstrate. There exists a permit. It's called the First Amendment, and it applies literally everywhere within the borders of the United States.
Well, I understand that, and I know that I took the other route and kudos to me, starting the peace movement here in Portland, reviving it in the early 60s.
You're claiming to be the man who started the peace movement here in Portland?
Yes, I am.
Are you?
I am. Oh, I'm taking it seriously.
Hey.
You're taking me seriously.
Good job.
Yeah, I worked with the peace churches and others, and it was really quite conservative, because it had to be, I think. But it was it was basically the Ban the Bomb movement.
Oh, okay, I got you.
You know. So, yeah, that was a long time ago, and we were all quite naive. I was a child. No, really. And it was effective. And it really was the beginning of the examination on multiple political levels of what the United States was engaged in the Cold War. So, that was a good thing.
Well, when Mr. Keating phones in, we will certainly go talk to him.
Yeah, Joe Keating will call us. I think he's doing the security for this thing.
Okay.
Dan Handelman called me yesterday.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program.
It is. Chaos though it be.
Chaotic though it may be. This is also KBOO 90.7 FM.
That's true.
Sometimes chaotic, sometimes not, but we love it in all of its forms.
No, we don't.
Yeah, we do.
I do not.
I do. I love this place.
Oh, okay.
So what we're going to talk about today, we're going to have a brief interlude to talk with Mr. Keating about this march, but what we're going to talk today is about the fact that the president's a racist. Were you aware of this?
What?
That the president is a racist.
Gee, it never occurred to me.
Never crossed your mind?
No, I thought, what a cool guy. He must be swell. And no sexism either.
No sexism either.
No pinching of you-know-what either.
Right, gotcha. So I'm, The large body of evidence that has amassed over the man's lifetime, then, would be, in your opinion, merely coincidence. It's not actually evidence of racism.
Sure, the fact that his father essentially said to him, don't let black people into the buildings that are public buildings.
Right. The fact that they were actually prosecuted and fined by the feds for discriminatory housing practices.
Yeah, just coincidence.
Right. In that time that he took out a full-page ad in the New York Times calling for the execution of the so-called Central Park Five.
Who turned out, of course, not to be the guilty parties, and it turned out to be inappropriate in every sense, because the guys had not yet had a trial.
That's true. And he never acknowledged the fact that they were exonerated.
Yeah, he just moved on.
Right. So that's a lot of this stuff, but you're arguing this is just coincidence and not evidence that he's a racist.
No, of course I'm not.
So I'm sure that I'm sure the incident I'm about to describe will also fall into that category.
Yeah, everything he does is coincidence, because he has no mind.
Right. So if you haven't been paying attention for the past couple of weeks, way back on July the 14th, the president...
Wait, July 14th, isn't that a big holiday in France?
I don't know, is it?
Yeah, it's Bastille Day, and they have the big parade that the president wants to imitate.
Oh, yeah, the one he's jealous of.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's jealous of Macron's missiles.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And we won't go there.
All right. So the president put out a series of tweets addressing the group of four congresswomen of color, the freshman congresswomen of color, who have come to be collectively
troublemakers,
known as the Squad.
The Squad,
which
right.
is a less than optimal nickname, but there it is. So we'll run with it.
I'm not going to run with it.
Okay, the Squad. The Squad, I think, in the minds of many leftists and progressive, represents exactly what representative office holders should be, and also I think represent what the Democratic Party should be. So this, which is to say, there, I think they're quite popular among the left. I'm a big fan of all of them.
I'm a big fan of them, but I actually am not in favor of the Democratic Party moving to the left as a social democratic party, because I think it'll be a disaster. But we can talk about that.
Let's not, though.
Let's save that for another time.
So I'm just going to read you the tweets.
Okay.
There's three of them. The president tweeted, "So interesting to see progressive Democrat congresswomen who originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe."
Okay, stop. No. All that, that's not true. None of that's
is
true.
Is this what we're gonna stop as we go through? That's fine.
I'll shut up. No.
Okay.
Go ahead.
"Who originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, the worst, most corrupt, and inept anywhere in the world, if they even have a functioning government at all, now loudly and viciously telling the people of the United States, the greatest and most powerful nation
boom,
on
boom,
earth,
boom,
how our government is to be run. Why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came?"
Like Michigan.
And New York City. Wait, Trump's from there. Never mind. "Then come back and show us how it is done. These places need your help badly. You can't leave fast enough. I'm sure that Nancy Pelosi would be very happy to quickly work out free travel arrangements." Now, without polishing the many truths and the many falsehoods embedded in these tweets, let's just step back and frame this for what it is. The sitting president of the United States told four congresswomen of color to go back where you came from.
Even though only one of them was born in a different country, and she moved here when she was a child.
And when she was a child, as a refugee from Somalia, yes. Yeah. So not only is it completely inaccurate, he's a racist. This is a racist statement. The language is racist.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the litany of crimes that we ran down at the beginning of the show, the many incidences of evidence point to the fact that the president is a racist. this is another exhibit. The difference regarding this incident lies, there's many, but principally, major media outlets have actually started using the term racist to describe both the president's language and his character. This is new. This is something that hasn't happened before, even in the light of all this overwhelming body of evidence we talked about. This is a good thing that people are now essentially, saying if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck.
Yeah, but I don't like the squid.
I don't know what that means.
I meant the squad. Sorry.
All right. So,
I don't dislike them. I think they're cool. I just dislike the labeling process.
You just dislike the labeling process.
Yeah.
All right. So the president issued these tweets. An uproar predictably followed.
Yeah.
He then went on to hold a campaign rally.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's actively campaigning for president, even though
always.
The election is
all
a year and a half away. All the time campaigning for president. And then he mentioned the Squad. In particular, he mentioned, I think, the member of the Squad, Representative Ilhan Omar from Minnesota.
And accused her of anti-Semitism, among other things.
Accused her of anti-Semitism. That cudgel has been used against her for a long time.
Well, because she criticizes Israel.
Right, which is not the same as being anti-Semitic. But again, we're not going to go there.
No, we don't have time.
But I think that in the minds of many conservative followers of Trump, that her image makes their heads explode in much the same way that a president with dark skin and a name like Barack Hussein Obama made their heads explode.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, she is a dark-skinned woman of African descent who wears a hijab and is a Muslim. All these things, as I just mentioned.
Well, actually, she just
cause conservative craniums to rupture. All right. So she has been singled out both by the president and his followers as perhaps the most egregious and offensive member of the Squad. So he brought her name up at the rally, and what followed was a chant from the crowd of "Send her back, send her back." We're going to listen to that right now.
"That Americans speak of Al Qaeda in a menacing tone and remark that you don't say America with this intensity. You say Al-Qaeda makes you proud. Al-Qaeda makes you proud. You don't speak that way about America. And at a press conference just this week, when asked whether she supported Al-Qaeda, that's our enemy. That's our enemy. They are a very serious problem that we take care of, but they always seem to come along somewhere. She refused to answer. She didn't want to give an answer to that question. Omar blamed the United States for the crisis in Venezuela. I mean, think of that one. And she looks down with contempt on the hard-working American, saying that ignorance is pervasive in many parts of this country. And obviously and importantly, Omar has a history of launching vicious anti-Semitic screeds.
There you hear it. Send her back, send her back. Well, reminiscent of lock her up, lock her up.
Well, the same deal.
Right. This is bad, Joe. This is really bad. We've been commenting on this program for a long time now about how Trump's rise to power has legitimized a portion of the electorate who didn't feel they could air their racial grievances in public and display their racism in public the way they feel they can do now. This is bad. This is really, I think, in many ways, what we're up against in the next few elections. I think we're going to decide whether or not we permanently legitimize this sort of thing as part of American politics, or if we banish it back to the cellar where it's been for the last several decades.
I think one of the ironies is that we have never, as a nation, come to terms with our Eurocentric, Anglo, really, biases. So, you know, this is the consequence of that never being resolved.
Okay. Now, we're going to pick up this thread again in just a few minutes. We've got our guest on the line with us now. I want to remind people, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Let's go to Joe Keating.
Good Joe morning. Keating, are you there?
I am, Joe. How are you?
I'm good, man. I understand that there's this demonstration on Sunday.
Correct.
And it's at 1 o'clock, and it's at the amphitheater at the Salmon Street Springs. And unlike some other events that have taken place recently, it is permitted and well-organized and intended to be a family-friendly event. Is that right?
That is correct, Joe, as opposed to other things that are happening are total focus.
No milkshakes?
No.
Okay. Milkshakes allegedly full of cement, which wasn't true.
Concrete or otherwise.
Yeah, really. So so what are you actually doing to make this family friendly?
Well, you know, one of the things is we have a track record of wonderful people that have come to peace marches that have helped with security. And so to that end, we're having an orientation for those folks in the community they want to help out with security and peacekeeping to get oriented, come on down, work with me as we have in the past. And we'll work with the police in terms of communication and in a respectful way. And so we don't anticipate problems, and if we're true to form, it'll be 100% friendly. And so that's the intent. And so, with your help, lad, I'm going to give a shout out, if I could, to the community to join me tomorrow night for a peace training orientation that will get ourselves organized to implement have a plan, a security plan, so we know what we're doing. And that's going to be held at 6 o'clock at the Augustana Lutheran Church. which is located at 2710 Northeast 14th Street.
Between 14th and 15th.
And not.
Yeah.
K-N-O-T-T.
Right.
And upstairs in the fireside room. It'll be a two-hour orientation, and it'll be a good training for anyone who hasn't had a peacekeeping or security orientation before.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll get us a chance to get to know each other and to get ourselves organized. And so if we're asking folks if they could, and they're interested in doing that, to give Peace and Justice Works a call at 503-236-3067.
Well, I have a 6-5 number here. Is that an error?
6-5.
Okay.
I made a mistake.
Okay, I'm going to repeat that because it was a little. Hang on, I'm going to repeat it. 503-236-3065. Okay.
Correct.
All right.
Hey, Joe, let me ask you something. Oh, sorry, please finish your thought. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, I know also if they want to call me, my number is 503-234-2613. And so that's it. Come on down, get oriented, and give us a hand on Sunday. Everything that we can do to put a stop on this madman called Trump, we should do it.
Do you anticipate anyone from the Proud Boys or Patriot Prayer, any of those guys, to show up?
We have heard no indications of anything like that. So you never know, but I don't anticipate that happening.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. Let's.
Yeah. No. And I just want to say that I don't usually go to these things because I'm kind of too. I'm not ready for battle. You know, I'm kind of chicken. And but
we're too young for battle.
Yeah. Right. But this seems to me to be potentially a very nice thing, a family friendly thing. The problem always is that people get a little bit bored with speeches and marching and so on. But it seems like a couple hours out of your days is worthwhile. It will, of course, get media coverage, and no one knows what that'll be like.
Right. And you know, I think any time that we can take time out of a day to give a shot at Trump is a good time to spend. And he's particularly vulnerable, I think, in the whole area of war, national security, peace. That's I truly think it's one of his Achilles heel type of deal.
Yeah, but being a centipede,
where
he's got 100 feet.
Come on out, it's going to be a good thing.
Anyway, okay, Joe, I want to thank you. I want to assure you that many of us will be there, and probably a lot of people listening to this show will be there. And again, we want to emphasize that the intent and probably the likelihood here is a peaceful, orderly demonstration. Is there going to be a march with it?
There is. It's a rally / march, and it'll be a short event, 2-3 hours max, but it'll be a good one.
Okay. I think this is a change from a lot of chaotic stuff that's gone on. Now, I'm not criticizing. I want to be clear here. I'm not criticizing spontaneous or planned events that are not family friendly, but this is particularly designed for the people who have probably felt to some degree a little bit intimidated.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it a lot, buddy. Hope to see you soon.
Okay, I'll see you on Sunday.
Yeah, cool.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Keating. Okay, that's coming up this Sunday.
Yeah.
1 o'clock. 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
All right. So this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM. The number to call, 503-231-8187. You can also write to us at the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or tweet at us.
Tweet.
At HonestAbe72. So we're talking about the president's racism.
Yeah.
We've talked about the president's racism before, and we will in all likelihood talk about it again.
Well, let's hope that come the election, we won't have to talk about his racism or anything.
Let's hope not. But there's a reason that this particular incident is noteworthy. As I mentioned, the response from major media outlets who have been really sort of cowardly stepping up and calling this what it is, which is racism. They've actually started to use that word. I think that's an important corner that we needed to have turned around.
Well, it's impossible to ignore it.
It is impossible to ignore it. The reason in this particular case that's impossible to ignore is because this is really more egregious than the things he said in the past. Go back where you came from is a textbook racist phrase. And I'm not just saying that. It's actually in the freaking textbook. According to the Federal Equal Opportunity, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, it is a legally actionable phrase if used against someone in the workplace. It's literally illegally racist to use against someone in the workplace. Here's a quote from there. Examples of potentially unlawful conduct include insults, taunting, or ethnic epithets, such as making fun of a person's foreign accent, or comments like, go back to where you came from. This guy is a racist, and to call him anything else is to elide this particular aspect of his personality, and more importantly, to ignore the fact that a significant portion of the electorate either feels the same way he does or is willing to tolerate that in a chief executive of the United States.
Well, it is interesting because, you know, his vice president is a Christian fundamentalist.
Uh-huh.
And apparently finds no problem with a guy who is admittingly aggressive toward women inappropriately, no problem with a guy who has shown himself to be immoral in many, many ways, and certainly not the follower of the teachings of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, really, the conservative Christian right, I'm not a little bit redundant, has essentially written itself off in terms of any moral ground it had previously claimed to occupy. They have gone all in behind this guy who, from where I'm standing, gives no evidence of abiding by or living with any sort of professed Christian value at all. In fact, I had a conversation with a family member about this, and he said, I asked him, he's a conservative Christian himself, why do you guys support this dude? And, you know, because he's a philanderer and he's, you know, he clearly is not living a Christian life as you understand it. And he said, well, it's because of abortion. He said he's got our backs on abortion and nothing else matters.
Well, he didn't until just before he got elected.
It doesn't matter. They've totally sold out and went all in with this guy.
Okay.
So they weren't worth listening to before, the Christian right, and they're even less worthy of your time now. So I want to dig a little bit deeper into this because in the course of, well, essentially arguing with people since this event happened a little more than a week and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
I've stumbled across something that I think has always been there, but it wasn't as clear to me as it is now, and that is that Trump's followers have a really hard time acknowledging that, first of all, he is a racist, and second of all, that they might be racist because they support him. I had a protracted engagement on social media with another family, a different family member.
You got a big family.
Yeah, I got to start looking at my family more closely. had this big argument on social media. Some of our listeners even took part in it. When we're talking about this incident, and I laid this out quite clearly. These are four congresswomen of color. They are leftists. They are radicals. They are unafraid to challenge the existing power structure. And they have been the target of the president's and the conservative right's racist ire. And I laid out how go back where you came from is literally a textbook example of a racist statement. One person came back with the argument, well, you know, here's what racists are. Here, I'll give you some examples of racists. Klansmen and Hitler.
No, those are good examples.
They are very good examples, yes. No one is denying that members of the KKK and Adolf Hitler were racists, yes. But there seems to be this pretty pervasive belief amongst the right that unless you have a shaved head and a swastika tattoo, or unless you walk around with a white sheet on your head, you're not a racist. And this is pretty important for the left to get its head around. That's a pretty deep level of denial that's out there. That there people say to themselves, and I guess maybe this helps them sleep at night, I don't know. They say, well, I'm not a racist because I don't go around burning crosses on people's lawns. Or I'm not a racist because, you know, I don't secretly believe the Nazis were right. This is such a misrepresentation of what racism actually is, of what racial prejudice actually is, and it completely obfuscates the fact that when you talk about racism in the United States, it's not just racial prejudice we're talking about, right? It is an entire system of social, economic, political norms that privilege one racial group over all others, and this system exists to perpetuate that privilege.
And an important point from a historical point of view is that the founding of this country, one of the essential weaknesses in order to unite it, was toleration, in fact, encouragement of slavery through the Constitution, and acknowledgement of racism against Native American peoples and, of course, against African Americans.
Of course. So when you're talking about racism in the United States...
And women. I forgot women.
And women. You're not just talking about prejudice. You're talking about an entire entrenched system which elevates one group of people and holds literally everybody else down. So by telling themselves that they're not actually racist and that the president isn't actually racist, I can't think of a more insidious and subtle way to make sure that this oppressive system perseveres. And this is really toxic, deeply toxic stuff.
Well, what's really toxic is he's legitimizing these bad feelings of many, unfortunately, many people who feel aggrieved and have not got an analysis adequate to the situation they're in. So that there's a lot of random anger and rage and bitterness, a consequent to people not doing well in a society which is really quite designed not to let them do well.
No, exactly. And I even had one person in the course of this argument I had on social media saying that they reject these racial groups altogether. They're completely an artificial construct, which is true.
Well, they're a socially constructed concept. That's not artificial.
By artificial, I mean fashioned by human beings.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yes, race is a social construct. They're, you know, one race of people is not superior to another. Period. And he's correct to point out that, yes, race is a social construct, but he's also saying, no, these racial groups, they just don't exist. I mean, that is even, maybe even more insidious.
Well, it's weird.
It is weird because, look, here's why racial groups exist, all right, in a nutshell. Roughly about 500 years ago, the nations of Europe embarked on an age of discovery in which they discovered new continents and lands that apparently had gone unnoticed by all the people who had lived there up to that point. And then they undertook the systematic conquest of these lands. They subjected or eliminated the indigenous people who lived there. They imported a labor force of enslaved Africans by the millions, and they set up a worldwide system of colonial exploitation that has defined our history for the last half millennium. Yeah. And more importantly, in terms of this conversation, the system they set up vested power, political power, social, economic power, entirely in the hands of Europeans and descendants of Europeans. And this is why we have racial groups, because one racial group, white people, got everything and everybody else was subjugated. That's why we have racial groups. That's why we have identity politics today. And while some people might find that distasteful on a superficial level, to pretend they don't exist is to be deeply ignorant of the actual history that has transpired.
There's also, in the course of the construction of society, the notion of the other.
The notion of the other,
and
yes.
And that essentially legitimizes and puts at the center in this culture, our culture, people of European extraction.
Indeed, let's go to the phones. Mike, good morning.
Morning, Joe. Abe, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm embittered, well, but I'm okay.
Yeah, I know. I understand the bitterness, and you know. But I'm trying to make my point really quick here, but I want everybody that can hear the sound of my voice, and you guys, I want you guys to listen carefully. You know, the time to get off your couch and your easy chair is now. You've got to ask yourself, is this the kind of country I want to live in? Is this the kind of society I want? And if you don't do it now and you don't get out and do something about it, it's not going to be long till they're going to be coming banging on your doors and dragging you out.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. This is okay. A tipping point. We are at a tipping point in the history of our nation.
One of the interesting things about the rise of fascism in Europe was that many, many liberals and leftists were in denial of its potential power. And to their horror, it was not a good analysis.
The incremental. It's the incremental. They're doing it bit by bit, slowly but surely. And when people adjust to it, it's like, you know, the frog in the boiling water, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
So, yeah, that's the only point I wanted to make. But, yeah, I'm scared to death. I'm a 71-year-old white man who's been fighting his whole life with the shame of being a white man and still trying to be proud to be white. I mean, but, you know, I'm covered with shame. By the way, I was there in the park box when you were doing your thing, Abe, and you and Jerry Harley, and wasn't it Jim Wilkins?
That was Joe. That wasn't me.
Joe. I'm sorry. Yeah, Joe. Yeah, I was there. I remember you. You were back there.
Well, it's good to be remembered, I guess.
Okay, gentlemen, let's pray for... No, get up off your couch, folks. Do it now, or the country you're going to be living in is going to be exactly... They're going to come and get you if you don't get with it.
Thank you very much for the call. I have to agree. I have to say I agree with virtually everything that caller said, except for when he talked about feeling shame for being a white person. You don't have to feel shame for being a white person.
I think that's kind of almost silly. It's a guilt induced to make you feel better about the fact that you are privileged, I think.
Perhaps, yes. But the key, I think, is what you just mentioned, Joe, is privilege. You don't have to feel guilty to be a white person. What you need to do is acknowledge that you live in a system that was constructed, particularly if you're a white man, that was constructed for your benefit. And you move through the world unobstructed by things that affect virtually everybody else besides white people.
And I think an important thing to understand about what's happening right now is so many working class people, and by that I mean the old traditional term working class and the middle class, are not really benefiting from the vast wealth that has been constructed and has been handed over to 1%. That, instead of being an analysis, which is complex, has turned into a bitterness which then seeks to find somebody who's responsible. And one of the most obvious symbols, which has always been encouraged, is race.
Indeed. So you don't have to feel shame. You don't have to feel shame for being a white person. What you need to do, here's what you need to do, white people, if you're struggling with this. No, you're chuckling, but this is true. This is a real thing I'm talking about.
I'm just seeing you as a speaker to the vast population of white people. That
made
me laugh.
I'm not. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm not. You know why? Do you know the only two demographic groups who gave majority support to Donald Trump in 2016? White men and white women.
Huh.
Right. Okay, so here's what you do, white people, if you're struggling with the legacy of this system. What you have to do is first acknowledge your privilege, start to perceive the ways that it helps you move through life and the ways that in which it obstructs people who aren't white. And then thirdly, you need to find ways to call out and challenge your privilege and that of other white people publicly. This means in your family, with your family, in the workplace, all over the place. You need to be an active agent in dismantling the system of privilege so that the benefits of living in a free republic accrue equally to everybody. That's what you have to do. Don't feel guilty. Don't waste your time feeling guilty. Acknowledge the privilege in which you live and do something to change it.
And I think I would add one other thing. You need to have an intelligent understanding of history. And that's not that hard, but you need to take the trouble to do that. And you need to understand how it is that for many of you, many of our audience, what is being told to you is essentially disallowing you the rights that you should have to a good chance, a good job, a good education. Because it's all structured right now more and more to discredit everybody.
Yeah. You're right. You're absolutely correct. And I think that brings us back to around to why it is so destructive and so toxic when the president of the United States tells four congresswomen of color, four people who have been voted into office by their peers and have legitimately seized the reins of power, right? When he tells them to go back from where they came from, this is Donald Trump actively working to preserve his system of privilege and actively working to push these upstart, uppity women back from whence they came. And some people have argued, a lot of people, even smart people on the left have said, oh, don't pay any attention to this. Don't even take his race bait because he's just trying to distract from the fact that he was cozy with a pedophile and I'll distract from all this other stuff going on. But no, that's not the answer either. Words like that cause real pain to real people. And I guarantee you, even here in Lily White, Portland, white people, that somebody you know was hurt profoundly by what the president said. So to pretend this is just some distraction, some political ploy, is to miss the point entirely. This causes real harm, and it needs to be addressed, and this guy needs to be voted the hell out of office.
Well, and we're going to be talking inevitably in the next few weeks, next year, and just how that's done. What's the best strategies? And we may be arguing a bit about it, But the fact of the matter is the primary, this is my position, the primary problem right now is incipient fascism, and the primary carrier of that problem is Donald Trump. So my focus will be, I think for the foreseeable future, to actually attack Trump and the kind of politics that he's going to be engaging in, including very likely wars to distract.
Yeah, if you're looking for real distractions, look no farther than the wars, which also do real harm to real people.
Well, yeah.
Let's go to the phones. James, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, all the stuff you guys are saying is good. I think one more thing that would really help white people understand what's going on is that they have to understand that they are beneficiaries.
Yes.
You know, that it's not a... It's like a cultural trust fund, you know, that's been set up over the process of 600 years.
That's a really good metaphor. I really like that.
And like any trust fund, the only people who can dissolve the trust fund are the beneficiaries. And you have to understand that you're a beneficiary.
That's really good.
You could never do one thing to engage in racial prejudice your entire life. You could have been nice. You know, you could have...
We are really going to be hard on this as a rule, because the FCC will be hard on us.
Yep.
So
you got to watch your language.
I
will.
It's really important.
Okay. Yeah, I apologize. You know, this stuff. Anyway, you have to understand that, you know, just your existence, your place was paid for by the blood, sweat, and tears of Native Americans and enslaved blacks. You know, they weren't enslaving African Americans. They were enslaving Africans. You know, they weren't killing Native Americans. They were killing Nicantlaca. We had names before they named us. You know, so
yes.
It's understanding. Yes. So it's just understanding that even your place here was paid for by somebody else. You don't have to do any of the hard work. It's already been done. You know, so you know, on top of understanding that you have to. You have to have an intelligent knowledge of history, you know, and all that other stuff. You have to also understand that, you know, this is just you being here, just you existing on this continent is racism itself.
Yeah, and,
you know,
yes. And I want to add one thing to that. Pragmatically, the notion of this privilege is probably the only thing remaining for many working class white people. That is the idea of their racial superiority. And that becomes more and more important as it becomes more and more clear that the benefits of the system are not going to ordinary working people, whether they're middle class or working class.
Well, yeah, exactly. But that's something that's been going on since
forever, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, it's... a lot of prominent Martin Luther King brought it up. He talked about this idea that it's like a racial wage, and they've been, you know, and a lot of these working class white folks have been taught that their racial wages, that just because their skin color, their racial wages are better, but they're so blinded by that privilege that the same people who are telling them that they're superior are ripping the rug out from under them at the same time.
Well, and one of the ironies of right now is, I'm going to have to let you go only because your kid is noisy, but right now the irony is that as wealth it keeps accruing to the top more and more, the fact of the matter is that ordinary working people, whether they're middle class or laborers, are losing out. They're not getting the benefits of the system. Listen, I want to thank you for the call. We're going to let you go give some other folks an opportunity.
Yeah, that was the call of the year. That was great.
Call of the year?
Oh, it was awesome.
Oh, okay.
Cultural trust fund that can only be dissolved by the beneficiaries. That is a brilliant metaphor for privilege. Because you know what? It's really, really hard to get white people to even perceive the fact that they live in a state of privilege, right? Because you say this to somebody, and he or she will say, well, I worked hard to get where I am today. You know, I studied my ass off in college. I worked hard to get into college. You know, I struggled to rise through the ranks at work. Yes, yes, you have struggled. You have overcome obstacles. The thing is, though, that none of those obstacles had to do with the color of your skin or your last name or anything like that. You didn't have to jump through any of the many, many hoops that people of color have to deal with every day. You never, as a kid growing up, I never had a conversation with my dad about how to interact with police so that I wouldn't get killed. black boys have that talk with their fathers or their mothers all the time.
And black women too, I think.
And black women too. So this is what we're talking about when we're talking about privilege. And it's difficult to get people to perceive this. But that metaphor, the cultural trust fund, that's a really good one. Let's go back to the phones. Francis, good morning.
Hi, Francis.
Hi. What you just said caused me to think of a conversation I had with a black man not too long ago who said that, you know, he'd just be going about his business, driving his car, going to work, whatever, and every time he sees a police car anywhere in his vicinity or in within that police officer's, even the officer's vision, he gets very anxious and nervous, mm-hmm. and is relieved when he's out of that officer's vision. And he's not doing anything wrong. He just knows what they're capable of. And I was thinking that the other day when I was driving down the street and a police car went by, you know, and I kind of noticed it and got a little bit anxious of it. Now, here's the white privilege part of it. You know, I laughed at myself and I thought, well, they're not even paying any attention to me. I'm a white lady, you know. So it's that severe and it's that serious. And when the Representative Green from Texas brought articles of impeachment the day that man said what he said, mm-hmm. and it was dismissed as something, you know, that he's just doing. That is all the reason right there that we need to impeach the man. Right there. That is enough. For him to have said what he said is enough.
What
this country really needs is a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And we need to acknowledge.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea,
all
actually.
All the privilege, all the injustice, everything that has happened, and do things to reparate for that, whatever that may be. But we need to seriously take this seriously. It is a major issue. It's not a distraction. It is what is wrong with this country. And the corporate military-industrial complex, the prison-industrial short-term profits, love this kind of stuff. Because that just makes an enemy out of somebody else, so we can have another war, another conflict, and they can make more. Corporations are not people, and we need to get that resolved real quick.
Hear, hear.
Because the people are the ones who are being oppressed and hurt. Corporations are not. And this whole Constitution was built to protect the rights of the people, not the corporations. So hopefully we'll get that figured out. And what is quite interesting to me is the person that has been described as a loon, Marianne Williamson,
mm-hmm.
is actually saying all this and being dismissed.
Yeah, you're right about that.
But anyway, yeah, and it's so obvious, and it's right there in our face, and to normalize a racist position. As if it's something that is viable and can be in the political arena and discussion is insane.
Yeah.
But it has been normalized. It's okay for that man to say all these racist things and still be there and have everybody, the pundits, talking about what that strategy is and what he's really going to be. It's wrong, period.
Agreed. I think that's
not be there.
That's why when he says things like this, we have to engage with him. Just ignore him is to normalize him.
Right, and that's what Williamson said. Call him on it. Why is everybody just letting him keep on doing it?
Well, I think
and then they try to say that these women, the Love Squad, I call them, are the face of the Democratic Party. Embrace that.
Agreed.
Don't pretend like, you know, what are you afraid of? Embrace them. Let them be the face of the Democratic Party. What are they saying that's wrong? Nothing.
I agree.
Absolutely
I agree.
Nothing.
Well, Francis, thank you for the call, as always. Right. We really appreciate your input.
You guys take care.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that's going to be something that we'll be discussing and should be discussed is the question of strategy and tactics versus the goals. And this is a hard one to get our minds around, because fundamentally this culture, for all of its history, has been conservative. And I mean that in a small c, conservative. And we are a people who have benefited enormously, even when we are being abused or discriminated against, by the fact of privilege. So this is all a structure that enwraps us and hides us and cocoons us from the reality of the situation. And it's right now, for the first time in my memory, a true fascist has taken control of the presidency and has brought one of the conservative party in America into a true fascist posture. And it's going to be very interesting to see how this goes. And I personally am very frightened, because fascism is very compelling for a lot of people.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is the Abe Joe Talk Radio program. Shelley writes into the show to say, I wonder what Steve Miller is doing behind the scenes.
Steve Miller, yeah.
Yeah. I wish the media would pull the curtain back on his influence. That is a very good point. Stephen Miller is a racist and a white nationalist, and he is Trump's closest political advisor right now. For all intents and purposes, he is crafting Trump's domestic policy at the moment. He certainly has the president's ear. So you might be someone who thinks that that's just fine. It's fine for a racist white nationalist to advise the president on domestic affairs. In fact, if you have a brain, that probably alarms you to a great degree, and it does me.
Well, it should be alarming. And in fact, when you look at Trump and the people he surrounds himself with, his community is ranges from the actual mafia to other kinds of mafias to people who are racist, people who are sexist, people who are opportunists, people who are very rich and don't care about anybody else. And it's really evil. And many, many working people who are aggrieved and unhappy are sucked into the web of that carass of fools.
Let's go to the phones. Eric, good morning. Are you there? Eric. All right, we'll come back to Eric if we can. Who else do we have? Harry, good morning.
Oh, greetings, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Good. Welcome. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, of course, tomorrow is a big day in Congress when Mueller has to testify for Congress about the report. And hopefully this will start the impeachment of Trump. I'm not too sure when they should start it, but there's still a lot of evidence to be gathered. But I think this will be the way of defeating Trump if he's, you know, being impeached during the election.
I think it's good that he's going to appear, but I have no confidence. I have really no confidence in what he's going to have to say or will be saying, and that it will lead to any real progress. This is a situation where compromise of the worst kind is taking place at the best levels. That's just my take. I may be wrong.
Oh, okay. And, So everyone's going to be watching tomorrow to see exactly what he says.
Yeah, it's at 5:30 in the morning, I think, here.
Oh, it is? Ooh, okay.
Well, isn't it 8:30 in the East Coast that he starts testifying? I think so.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So get up early, you know, have a snack.
Yeah, okay.
Drink
well,
coffee.
Hopefully, like I said, I know Pelosi's not keen on impeaching Trump, but I think it has to be done, even though the Senate will probably let him go. But it has to, because all the charges against him, you know.
She's a vote counter, which is what she should be in her job. This is a question of strategy. She doesn't disagree that he's a horrible man and an evil person and so on. She's simply looking at the time and when it will be right, and she's very careful. Very, very, very careful. So I don't diss her for that.
I think
there have to be struggles within the Democratic Party, because it is a big tent. So, you know, take it for what it's worth.
Okay. Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Hey, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. I think I should say something about the Mueller's testimony. If somebody is expecting him to drop a big bombshell implicating the president, it's not going to happen. He's very much a by-the-book guy. That's reflected in his report. He's already come out and said he's not going to testify about anything except what's already in the report. He was never going to bring forth charges against the president because of an existing DOJ guideline that says he can't. And nothing about that has changed, and he's not going to say anything explosive in his testimony. Now, if the Democrats are smart, and I I'm not willing to give them that benefit of the doubt right now. They will be very careful in ask the sort of questions they ask him.
Well, I think they should use an attorney. They should have their own counsel.
Yeah, yeah.
And not themselves.
Right. If they were really smart, this they'd let counsel do it. Yes.
There's no time to grandstand.
Of course, they're going to grandstand. You know they will. If they need to be very careful about the sorts of questions they ask. You know, they're not going to say, do you think the president is guilty? Because he's not going to answer that. They're going to need to ask, was it your intent, Mr. Mueller, that Congress should take up these investigations where you left off? That's the kind of question that they need to ask. That is the path to impeachment. So I hope that progressives are not going to tune into the Mueller hearings hoping to see fireworks, because you're not going to get any. Now, I also wanted to say something in follow-up to Trump's racist outburst against the Squad. A few days after the rally in the Carolinas, where they chanted send her back," he tried to walk that back. He tried to distance himself. He said he didn't
a little bit.
He said he didn't like it. He said he immediately started speaking again so that he could preempt their chant,
which is a lie.
We heard the audio on this program. He basked in those chants for a good 10 seconds before he said anything. And after he walked that back and tried to distance himself from that, he got a negative reaction from his base. So he turned around and doubled down again on his racism and embraced the chant. And you know what happened, Joe?
What?
His approval rating among Republicans rose.
That's scary.
It is scary.
That is very scary.
So Republicans apparently like a racist president.
Well, there's a lot of, anti-feminist sentiment within a lot of not all Republicans by any means, but a lot of Republicans. The party is, in fact, in a retro mode and has been since Ronald Reagan.
Let's take one more call. Eric.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. I don't. I believe racism is used, by the leaders to, divide and conquer. And it's all about the have and the have-nots. And the play that Trump is using is from, let's say the Lyndon Johnson playbook of elevating the lowest white man and putting them above the, richest or the smartest black man. So that's been used even with one of the constitutional signers, Pendleton.
I'd say that's in the playbook. Yeah, I wouldn't ascribe it necessarily to Johnson. But go ahead, continue.
Well, he did say that.
Yeah. Did he? Okay, I stand corrected.
Basically, the way to get elected and the way to hold power is to elevate the poorest white man and put him above the smartest or the richest black man. So right. Anyway, that's how racism works, is to basically divide and conquer and maintain the great divide of the have and have not.
Right. Poor
and black people unite, that's when they have to use racism to divide them. But the Jim Crow laws started with the first governor of Virginia, Pendleton. And when the poor and the black, the poor whites and the poor blacks started uniting, they just simply had to put in some kind of clause that the poor whites were going to be better than the poor blacks, and that's how that's how they lead and maintain the power. Not so much about black and white, but that's the have and the have-nots. So anyway, go back to Pendleton, the signer of the Constitution, how he modified the Constitution. Go back to Lyndon Johnson, how he governed. And so Trump is basically just taking that play of elevating poor whites who think they got Republican money, and they're just poor. And he divides everybody. But it's about maintaining, the great chasm of the rich and the poor.
I think you're right. I'm gonna have to let you go, though. We're running out of time.
Sure. Anyway, you guys are just, chasing your tail there. Thank you.
Okay. Well, that's probably true. I want to remind everybody that there is this very important event, which is family-friendly at 1 o'clock down by the bowl and the fountain by the river at 1 o'clock on Sunday. And, this event, if enough people attend it and if there are enough people who are conscientious and intend nonviolence, and I think there are, and that as a family-friendly event, it can be a nice statement of rationality and opposition to the current administration, and I hope people do show up, and I'm planning to be there.
Cool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking I might be there myself.
You might just do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I got young kids. Weekends are busy, but hey let's bring them out
bring
to
the
a
kids.
March,
That's
man.
That's the idea.
Yes, exactly. I thought this was a good discussion today.
Yeah.
We've got really smart listeners.
Yeah.
And their contributions, they're fantastic. They really
well,
make this show
the whole go. Reason for me to do this show is to hear from them.
Really? I thought it was to hear your own voice.
Well, I can do that in a lot of venues.
All right. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. Thank you to everybody who took part in the conversation today. We're going to be back at you next week with a special guest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until then, take care.
It's coming through a hole.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59 and 45 seconds. And about just 15 seconds as we hit that 9 o'clock, it is Alternative Radio with their talk about surveillance capitalism with Shoshana Zuboff. Then after that at 10, it's Flashpoints, where they're looking at Puerto Rico with interviews from the streets. Then at 11, on stage and studio host DMA Roberts presents a half-hour version of The Journey of Lady Buddha, a personal and historic exploration of cultural conflicts and spirituality and the search for the Asian goddess of compassion and mercy. Then rounding us out for our morning programming at 11:30, Art Focus host Joseph Gallivan interviews MK Guth about the state of art in Portland and the art infrastructure of funding, grants, programming, and studio space. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. And if you'd like to become a member, just go to KBOO.fm or take out that smartphone, click on that app, that beautiful KBOO app, and click on the red donate button. Coming up next, Alternative Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Rally Against War in Iran and Venezuela on Sunday, July 28th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Salmon Street Fountain Plaza in Waterfront Park in Portland. This march and rally will primarily focus on the possibility of U.S. military intervention in Iran and Venezuela, but also calling attention